Hebrews 11, things went wrong for a lot of people. Sometimes life isn't a bowl of cherries. Sometimes it's not easy. And it was Beth DeKiantis who passionately wanted to be in the Olympics. And she had a chance to be in the trials, the trial run, to qualify whether or not she could actually run in the Olympics. And she had to cover a distance that was 26 miles and 385 yards. And she had to do this in 2 hours and 45 minutes or less. She started out strong in the qualifying race. At about 23 miles into it, she began to falter. Her body began to protest violently. Searing pain gripped her leg muscles as she tried to run, and she managed to hang on in spite of what was torturing agony in her muscles and in her legs. And she stayed in the race. Finally, she came around and she saw the straightaway. It was the final run, the straightaway. She could see the finishing line in front of her with only 200 yards left to go. And she had 2 minutes on the time schedule. She could make it. Suddenly, she stumbled and fell. And she was hurt. And she was down for 20 seconds. 20 seconds were lost. And as she lay there, the crowd began to yell at her, "Get up! Get up!" The clock was still ticking, and she had very little time. Now, it was 2 hours and 44 minutes that had elapsed. She had 1 minute left to go. She staggered to her feet, and she began to limp towards the finish line. And she was within 5 yards of the finish line. Her legs couldn't hold her anymore. They just gave out. And she dropped to the ground. And the crowd began to cheer, and they began to yell out at her again, "Get up, get up," and she couldn't. But she began to crawl with all of her strength that she had on her hands and knees. And they cried out, "Keep going, keep going." And she crawled and she inched along, and every inch seemed to her like it would take an hour to go that distance. She crawled on her hands and knees, and she crossed the finish line. And it was 2 hours, 44 minutes, and 57 seconds. She made it. She qualified with just 3 seconds within the time frame. Beth made the race. She qualified. She attained the goal. And she did because she never gave up. She never gave up no matter what happened to her. She endured what she had to endure in order to finish her race. But you and I are called to a race, aren't we? We're called to a race, and we've got to finish it. Will we make it all the way? Will we have what it takes? The author of Hebrews speaks to all the people who came before us. Many are written in the Old Testament. Many famous people, Moses, Abraham, all of the heroes of faith that are written there are discussed. And it shows that they made it. They finished their race. And so it says in Hebrews 11 and in verse 32, "And what more shall I say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon and Barak and Samson, Jephthah and David also, and Samuel and the prophets, who through faith subdued kingdoms, wrought righteousness, obtained promises, and stopped the mouth of lions. They quenched the violence of the fire and escaped the edge of the sword. And out of weakness they were made strong. And they waxed valiant in fight. They turned the fight of the armies of the aliens, and women received their dead raised to life again. And others, however, were tortured. And they didn't accept deliverance that they might obtain a better resurrection." Do you understand what we're talking about? Beth could have accepted deliverance. She could have stayed down. Her legs hurt her so bad. You and I, we sometimes accept deliverance, don't we? That is, the pressure builds up on us, and we cave in, we give in, we sin. We accept deliverance from the pain we're suffering and feeling. We don't endure to the end. We don't keep going. We stop. We cave in. These people would not accept deliverance. They kept going in spite of the pain, in spite of their suffering. An amazing story for them. And so it continues in verse 36. Others had trial of cruel mockings and scourgings, yes, moreover, in bonds, even imprisonment, and they were stoned. They were sawn asunder, and its legend is that it was Isaiah who was hiding in a tree from his persecutors, and they sawed the tree in half. They were tempted, they were slain with the sword, they wandered about in sheepskins, goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, and tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and in mountains and in dens and caves of the earth. And these all, having obtained a good report through faith, received not the promise, God having provided something for us, something better for us, that they without us should not be made perfect. And so they qualified, didn't they? They finished the race, and they qualified, but they didn't receive their crown. There's a place for them in the kingdom, but they didn't receive their crown because they're waiting for something. And the scriptures say they're actually waiting for us. They're waiting for the rest of us to finish our race. And so the book continues in chapter 12. Wherefore, seeing that we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin that so easily besets us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us. And then we'll be looking to Jesus, who is the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him, he endured the cross, that terrible crucifixion, despising the shame of it, and he sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him that endured such contradiction of sinners against himself, lest you be wearied and want to faint in your minds. Never give up. That's what he's saying. Look at the example. A cloud of witnesses, a huge array of people who finished their race. And there are there as an example. And Jesus Christ is there as an example to us. It wasn't easy. It wasn't always blessings. It was tough sometimes. They kept going. And then he says, you have not resisted unto blood, striving against sin. And you have forgotten the exhortation which speaks unto you as unto children, my son, despise not the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when you're rebuked of him. And so it says that these great men and women of God, let's go to Matthew 10, these great men and women of God suffered sometimes terribly, but they never gave up, and they were an example for us. They sacrificed things. They lost things in their life. Sometimes they lost their lives, and they endured what other people did to them. Can we follow their example? Can we finish our race? Because to me, endurance plays an important role in this issue of salvation, doesn't it? We have to finish it. And Jesus Christ made this abundantly clear when he said this. It isn't about just accepting him, is it? It isn't just about signing some tract somewhere and saying, well, I'm on your side, Jesus. It's about actions. It's about how we live, ultimately, how we are going to develop in our mind and in our heart, and what kind of character we're going to ultimately have. And we're going to have to do this through an entire lifetime. We've got to endure to the end. And Jesus makes this clear in Matthew 10, where he says this in verse 21, at the end of the age, brother shall deliver up brother to death, and father the child, and the children shall rise up against their parents and cause them to be put to death. And you shall be hated of all men for my name's sake, but he that endures to the end shall be saved. Now Jesus says this again in Matthew 24. For emphasis, he says this, Matthew 24 and verse 7. Here we are, living at the end. And we're supposed to endure to the end, whether it's the end of our life or the end of the age. And he gives us this admonition. We can't give up. We can't turn back. We can't stay down when we mess up, when we fail. We've got to get back up and got to keep going. And so in Matthew 24 and verse 7, he reiterates this again, saying, for nation shall rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines and pestilence and earthquakes, and all these are the beginning of sorrows. And then they'll deliver you up to be afflicted and shall kill you, and you shall be hated of all nations for my name's sake. And then many will be offended, and they'll betray one another. They'll hate one another, and many false prophets shall arise and shall deceive many. And because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. And don't we see that in our society today? We're losing our love. We're just becoming selfish in our world, in our society. And then he says this, but he that shall endure to the end, the same shall be saved. I remember there were times in my life when Protestants would come up to me and they'd say, are you saved? Are you saved? They want to know if you're saved, and I'd always say, well, no, because we have to endure to the end in order to be saved. But what exactly does it mean to endure? The Greek word is hupomino, and it means to remain. It means to stay steadfast. Don't recede. Don't retreat. It is to persevere under misfortune and trials. It's to bravely put up with even ill treatment. Can we do it? Are we capable as a people of God today? You know, many times you can make a sacrifice, can't you, for something you believe in? It's not too hard to do that. But what if you have to make the sacrifice over and over and over again? This is what depression occurs from many cases, not from a single event, but often it will happen when you have something keep happening, when you keep suffering losses, and when you seemingly feel that there's no hope for resolution. What happens when this occurs in our lives? What happens to you when it occurs in yours? Do we stick it out? Do we have the gumption? Do we have the chutzpah, I guess, 2 Timothy 2, if you will, to hang in there, to go the miles, to do it for Christ's sake, and to hang in there and endure to the end. It could happen to any one of us. Sometimes life doesn't seem like it gives us very much back. It seems like we put a lot of work and effort out. It seems like we give and we don't get anything back. And when these times happen to us, when we experience failures, when we experience losses, when we have to make sacrifices we don't want to make, how do we deal with it? Do we drop out? No. What happens when you fail? What happens when you know you've done something wrong and you've done something that is against your principles and your belief? Do you stop? Do you quit? No. When these things occur to us, what do? We're down. We get back up and walk. If we can't walk, we keep crawling. What we never do is we never stop. We never give up. We endure to the end, one way or another. We keep staying in the process and letting God work with us whatever strength we have, we apply to seeking the kingdom. And for this reason, the Bible calls us something unique. It calls us Christian soldiers, actually. Let's read this in 2 Timothy 2 and verse 1. You therefore, my son, be strong in the grace that is in Christ Jesus, And the things that you have heard of me among many witnesses, the same commit you to faithful men who shall be able to teach others also. You therefore, it says, endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. No man that wars entangles himself with the affairs of this life, that he may please him who has chosen him to be a soldier. And so it is that the apostle here uses an analogy of being a soldier, because a soldier has a life that is not his own. A soldier is subject to hardships, and they are subject to deprivation. And so it is that we are Christian soldiers. Oh, I know you don't see the flashes of blinding light, do you? You don't see or hear bombs going off. It's not like the 4th of July. But I say this, because of that, we sometimes forget that we are in a very real war. And the war is fought on three basic fronts, and one is our human nature, isn't it? We are the enemy, and we've got to remember to fight ourselves, because we'll fool ourselves and we'll allow ourselves to go places we shouldn't go and to do things we shouldn't do. And then there's another front, and it's this world. And it has its glitter, it has its glamour, it has its attraction, doesn't it? Yes. And then there is a great, powerful spirit being, and that great being broadcasts attitudes of selfishness, attitudes of hostility and resentment. And if we get on that wavelength, it's just like dialing in a radio. He's broadcasting frequencies, and if we get on that frequency, we pick up, we receive, and it exacerbates our own wrong attitudes. And so there's all these things to fight, and yet it's sometimes tricky because it's coming from us. And we don't recognize it. And we don't see that we're actually in a war. And that we are fighting and must be fighting against these poles and these forces. There are angelic forces out there bent on overthrowing us. And they can use other people, can't they, to get to you. And so you'll see this. They'll influence a supervisor. They'll influence employees. They'll influence kids, mates, and others to give us hardship, to give us a battle to fight. Well, my point is we've got to be aware of it. We've got to be aware of it. Remember it. That each day you're actually in a war, and that we're soldiers, but we're always looking for having it better. We're looking for having it easier. We want comfort. We want to seek that. That's how our human nature is actually designed, isn't it? We operate on the pain-pleasure principle. And so we seek pleasure, and we try to avoid pain at all costs. And that's our human nature. It's going to drive us always in that direction. And yet Paul calls us soldiers, and to be ready to endure hardship and to make it a little tough on ourselves sometimes. Anyway, these forces out there, they exert pressure on us every day. And what I say is this, we've got to realize we're in a battle. And we've got to fight for our spiritual life. It's not something we can take lightly. It's not something that we can second rate or not be focused on. Because if we don't, we'll fall and we might not get up. And I'm very concerned about that. And for that reason, it says that we're not to become entangled in the affairs of this world. Now, we have to be in the world. We have to take care of our affairs. We have to pay our bills, and we have to do all of that. But what he's saying is don't get yourself entangled in the affairs of the world. And when Paul wrote this, he understood that the rest of the community that he spoke to understood how it worked with soldiers. That soldiers, under Rome's code of conduct, if they were a soldier in the employ of Rome, they were not allowed to have any other civilian job, because they were dedicated to one thing and one thing only, and that was fighting the wars for Rome, staying in shape for that, training for that. They were not to get involved with and have a stake in this world. Let's go to Mark 4. The reason I say this is because this is what has happened to the church today. Mark 4, the church is getting involved in this world. It is doing this. That's exactly what has happened. The church of God is nothing today like it was in the past. I remember us locked arm in arm. I remember us all believing we'd die for one another. I remember those days, and they were very real. And we were hit by an apostasy, and the church of God and the people of God are just stunned. They were reeling from this. It was shocking to them. And what's happened is some have said, my Lord delays his coming. And they've become involved in other pursuits. They've made career more important than kingdom. They have made status, position, power, things, stuff more important than the crown that awaits us for finishing the race. And some have veered off, and they're no longer running. All kinds of difficulties have happened because we have become distracted as the people of God. Remember the parable of the sower. Mark 4 and verse 5, it says this by way of reminder, speaking of the sower sowing seed. And in verse 5, let's go to verse 1. He began to teach by the seaside, and there was gathered to him a great multitude, so that he entered into a ship, sat in the sea, and the whole multitude was by the sea on the land, and he taught them many things in parables. And he said in verse 3, hearken, behold, there went out a sower to sow. And it came to pass as he sowed, some fell by the wayside, and the fowls of the air came and devoured it up. Others fell on stony ground, and didn't have much earth, and immediately it sprang up. But because it had no depths of earth, when the sun was up, it was scorched, and because it had no root, it withered away. And verse 7, and some fell among thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked it, and it yielded no fruit. And others fell on good ground, and it yielded fruit that sprang up and increased, and brought forth 30 and 60 and some 100-fold. And then he said, he who has ears to hear, let them hear. I want us today to have ears to hear, and especially I want to focus on one piece here. People of God are getting caught up and distracted today. And so Jesus explains the parable, and he explains it in a beautiful way. But what he's depicting here is God being the sower. And the seed is the word of God, and the soil is our heart. And so what is our heart like as far as, is it going to nurture the word of God that we're given? Are we going to let it grow in us? Mark 4 and verse 14, where he begins to explain, the sower sows the word, and these are they by the wayside, where the word is sown, but they have, but when they've heard, Satan comes immediately and takes away the word that was sown in their hearts. And verse 16, and these are likewise which are sown on stony ground, and when they have heard the word, immediately receive it with gladness. But they have no root in themselves, and so they endure for a time, and afterwards, when the affliction or persecution arises for the word's sake, immediately they're offended. And so the first case was a case of Satan's influence, wasn't it? The second case is they have no depth, they have no character, and so their human nature affects them, doesn't it? And so they're not fighting themselves. They're not fighting Satan. And then it says, and these are they which are sown among thorns, such as hear the word, and the cares of this world, and the deceitfulness of riches, and the lust of other things entering in, chokes the word, and it becomes unfruitful. And then these others are they which are sown on good ground. They hear the word, receive it, and bring forth fruit, some 30-fold, some 60, and some 100. And so he says to have ears to hear. Do you see what's going on here? Three fronts. You see that we've got to fight Satan, we've got to fight the pulls of this world, and we've got to fight our own human nature. But the thing that's happening to me today in the Church of God, the primary battleground is being fought on this issue of the thorns. It is the thorny part. It is this that the cares of this world, like weeds, are strangling the people of God. because what they thought was going to happen didn't happen when they thought it would, they became disillusioned, they backed off, distanced themselves a little bit from the truth of God, and then they became distracted, and they are now seeking other things. Let's go to 2 Corinthians 10. They're caring about stuff. They're caring about their position. They're caring about status. They're caring about everything, but not passionate about the kingdom. When it comes to the kingdom and the work of God, they have become lukewarm, half-hearted, because they are comfortable where they are. Instead, we are supposed to be soldiers exhibiting certain qualities. That is, we're to be consecrated to our mission. It's got to be first. It's our prime directive. And we're to put the kingdom before everything else. We're to be dedicated to it. And as a soldier then, a soldier learns. He trains to be obedient. They have a boot camp, don't they? And you go for, what, 3 months or something to boot camp? Why do you do that? It's to totally redirect your thinking, because we're so independent in our thinking. And so they break you down in the boot camp, and they rebuild you in the image they want you, so that you will follow orders. They retrain you so you will follow orders without giving it any thought. And we are to learn to be Christian soldiers and obey God, not men, to obey God without disbelief, without quarreling, without arguing. And so it says in 2 Corinthians 10 this. But I, Paul, myself, beseech you by the meekness and gentleness of Christ, whose in presence I am base among you, but being absent, I'm bold towards you. But I beseech you that I may not be bold when I'm present, with the confidence wherewith I think to be bold against some, which think of us as if we walked according to the flesh. And then it says, for though we walk in the flesh, we do not war after the flesh. We are in a war. But we're not warring with weapons. You're not carrying an AK-47. You're not a terrorist. You understand? But yet we're in a very real war. And then it says the weapons of our warfare are not carnal. They're not of the flesh. But they are mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds, casting down imaginations, and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ, and having a readiness to revenge all disobedience when your obedience is fulfilled. And so here we are in a war. And you imagine yourself a soldier, and you have the general gives a directive, and you're going, well, I don't know about that. You know, I see it this way, or I see it some other way. Do you understand that we are to take thoughts like that? Because they happen, don't they? Do you ever contest God's wisdom in anything? Yeah, I guess. Sure we do. But what we're to do is, when a thought like that comes up, we are to cast it down, cast it out, because God's way is right. It doesn't mean that we're always going to win. It doesn't mean we're always going to get what we want. It doesn't mean we're always going to come out on top. But in the long run, it is what builds character, it is what counts, and it's what's going to be eternal. It's the gold, as it were, that we're earning when we make sacrifices for our great God. And so a soldier doesn't think for himself. His thoughts of rebellion, they don't enter his head. He rejects them. And he learns to follow orders without questioning them. And so it is that a soldier is conditioned to sacrifice. They are conditioned to have privations and so on. And I remember a story that I read once about a soldier's attitude. They were marching. It was in World War I. And one of the soldiers looked over on the roadside, and there he saw a body of a young boy who had died in the fight. He was on his way to the line, and it was his first time to be up on the line. And he wrote that he remembered looking at that body as he marched towards the line, and he said he remembered Jesus' words, "My body, which is broken for you." And so he was willing to go and give his life for a cause he believed in, the freedom of the democratic nations in the Western world. And we too must be willing to give our life for the kingdom of God. Not that we would fight in men's wars, but we should be willing, and we should have dedicated ourselves at baptism to give our lives, if necessary, to this cause. And so it is that the sacrifice that the soldier gives is one that is given daily, and it comes, in our case, daily, and it is largely with human nature, the pulls of the world and Satan that we are fighting. And at this writing, the Apostle Paul was still fighting the fight, wasn't he? Yes, he was. He went up to Rome. He was imprisoned for 2 years. Did he ever stop preaching the gospel of the kingdom of God? No. The very end of the book of Acts shows him, and everyone was coming to him. He couldn't go out. He was chained to a guard. They came to him, and he preached the gospel of the kingdom of God. He never stopped. He never gave up. He never caved in. He never receded. He never turned around and went the other way. He just kept going. Oh, he was slowed to a crawl, wasn't he? Imprisoned in that room and chained to a centurion. Yeah, he was slowed to a walk, maybe a crawl. Never stopped. He went to his death, and he was a great man. Are we still fighting like him? Are we fighting, or have we kind of let things slip? Have we let ourselves let down? Are we still enduring, still working it, or are we softening, and are we weakening? To me, this is so evident. We're in the age of Laodicea, and it is this last era of the church before Christ returns. And it says that these people are rich, and they're increased with goods, that physically they have all they need. Spiritually, they're poor, and they're blind, and they're naked. Instead of wearing the fine linen of the saints that we heard about last week, they're comfortable. And being too comfortable can really become dangerous, because it breeds a softness. It breeds a complacency. And this has happened to our entire nation over time. At one time, Americans believed in America. They believed in the values and the standards of America. They came here by the thousands to Ellis Island and would check in there. And they would come here in hopes of being a part of what this nation was all about. Yes, they believed in our country, and they gave themselves in sacrifice to develop it. They built corporations. They built cities. They built canals. They built great dams and energy plants. And people died to do this because they believed in America. Yes, then we plunged into the Roaring Twenties. Remember that? Yes. And people wanted to make more and more money, and they began speculating and so on, and they spent that money on themselves, and people became self-indulgent as they began to become more and more wealthy. And then the World War came along, and people fought to protect democracy. But at that point, World War II, America really lost her innocence. And we sent our women out to work. And then when the men came back, the women stayed working. And we became more and more wealthy, and money and your annual income began to mean more and more to people. Yes, two incomes became the norm. And the common people today in America, they became wealthy. And then the atomic age occurred, and we became threatened, didn't we? And people began to live for the moment. And that's what happened to us. And today we live in a generation that has become the me generation. Right now we want instant gratification. We got to have computers that are screaming fast. We want a clip. We want our answer right then. We want to put our money in a machine and get our meal out. We want everything instantaneously, and it's all about us, but we're wealthy beyond any thought of our imagination could have ever been. Can you imagine the people who came here in the 1800s? Because they never would have imagined how rich we'd be. They had no grasp. But rich, being rich and having money, breeds complacency. And so we have been complacent towards God. We've become desensitized to sin. Our country's trying to push God right out of our whole entire nation now. They don't want the Ten Commandments in the courtrooms. They don't want His name on their money. And so we're doing these things, and we're watching in our living rooms on television what our parents would never have dreamed of. They would have just closed their eyes. They would have told us as children, don't you dare watch that. And now we watch and let our children watch too. If you've watched MTV, it's almost soft porn sometimes. And so we become addicted to our pleasures, and we go through a withdrawal if we start to back away from them. And in all of this, God has called us to overcome, to resist, to be hardened, toughened, steeled like a soldier is. And yet so many cases, I think I have, and I know some of our people have, fallen into a complacency and allowed ourselves to be soft and allow ourselves to be tempted, to allow ourselves to cave in to pressures and temptation. But we must not allow ourselves to ever become comfortable. And I see that now more than ever. We need to be on the edge, and we need to be alert, because we've got to resist. We're in a war, and we're soldiers, and we've got to endure, and we've got to endure to the end. So many times I think, as I see us as the people of God, how much do we see each day that we're not trying to be happy here? We're not trying to just fulfill our needs. We're not trying to become somebody in this world, not trying to have the bright car and the right house. We're on a pilgrimage to the kingdom of God. Do we think about it? Do we see it? Or we just get caught up in so much stuff every day that we lose sight of what it's all about? Yes, we can be happy in life, can't we? As we read in the reading. Well, enjoy the things in life. You know, give yourself decent clothes. You know, anoint yourself. Eat decent meals. Enjoy a marriage relationship. Enjoy these things that God has given us in life, because it's our portion. It's okay. Take care of your business, as it were. But that is never to become primary. We have a race to run, and we've got to remember it, and we've got to steel ourselves, and we've got to be training for what we are heading for. Our goal is the kingdom and the family of God. It is to be more like Jesus Christ. MacArthur said this: a soldier is called sometimes to fight, sometimes to die, but always to suffer. And he didn't mean that masochistically. He just meant that the soldier can't allow himself to become comfortable. I remember I read Ernie Pyle's work, and he was in the war as a personal correspondent. Here's what he said. It was kind of interesting. He said, you know what? He said it was so hard. He lived out in the foxholes. He couldn't take showers for weeks on end sometimes. And he said he just was hungry, and it was tough, and it was hard. And then after a few weeks, he said, you know, I began to like it. I began to feel like a real man. I toughened up. And he said, I felt so good. I had abilities I never had before. You know, I think we should feel that way spiritually. We should be toughening up, training for the war we're in, and toughen ourselves up. The U.S. Fighting Man's Code for the U.S. Army states, The indomitable will to resist is not acquired overnight, nor can it be supplied by military training alone, for it rests on character traits instilled in our homes and in our churches. It's not happening anymore. Those values and standards are not occurring. They're not being taught. And people today don't think there's a reason to fight. They don't think there are values and principles to protect. There aren't a transcendent value and standards that are being taught in the schools and many of our churches. What do you look on television? What do you see? Get rich gospel, right? God just wants to give you money. Send your money to me and God will bless you. What kind of religion is that? What's it teaching people? The value of mammon, which you can't serve and serve God at the same time. So it's not happening in the schools. It's not happening in the churches anymore. They're not training us in character. And self-esteem is more important than the values of democracy and the principles of freedom and the things that our country was founded on. It's a whole different world of self. So we're not being taught real faithful living for God. We're not being taught self-discipline. We're not being taught that there are real morals and values that are absolutes anymore. And that's why our nation today has been stripped of the pride that it once had in its power. It's been broken. We have power. We still do have power. But we're so afraid to use the power that we have. And so we went ahead and we fought with our arms tied behind our back in Vietnam. Remember that? And we finally pulled out. And we didn't ever finish what got started in Somalia. Why didn't we? Why were we so afraid? And we didn't finish Desert Storm. And now we're going to be seemingly stuck in a quagmire in Iraq because we are being so kind to everybody that we won't go into Fallujah and level it. And so they just keep kidnapping people and beheading them and killing them. Do you understand what's happening to us? We have gotten so soft as a nation. Well, do you think the church isn't affected? Do you think I'm not affected and you are too? We are affected by all of this. And so it is that America doesn't have respect for its military men anymore. We rejected the Vietnam vets. We are now attacking and undermining the war in Iraq. And we do this before the eyes and the ears of the very troops that have put their life on the line to fight. What are we thinking of? We should honor them. As General MacArthur once explained, the story of the infantry soldier is an old and an honorable one. He carries his home with him and often his grave. Somehow he must bring along his whole paraphernalia of fighting, as well as his domesticated living, the grocery store, the ration dump, the hospital, the medical corps, the garage, the motor pool, the telephone, the signal service. And he must sleep and eat and fight and die on foot. In all the weather, rain or shine, and without any shelter, he's vulnerable day and night. And death has his finger on him for 24 hours a day in battle, going forward or retreating from it. It's a wonder that the morale of these uniformed gypsies, never falters. It is, isn't it? You have to give credit to those vets that have fought to preserve what we enjoy every day. Go to Proverbs 3. Proverbs 3. So it is that the soldier must go through training to make him able to do that, to toughen him up. And that training starts when we're young in belief and values and standards and so on that we feel are worth dying for and fighting for. Churchill quotes a quote from Churchill from the diaries of Lord Moran. Moran said, "Marshall told me that the problem of this war, that was World War II, was the disciplining of the citizen soldier. Any way that has been his task, and it has not been easy, for the American youth is self-confident. He's quite certain that he knows a better way of doing things than those who are ordering him about. So Marshall had to begin at the beginning with a 3-month training period to get the recruit to see that he must do what he's told. And so that's when it began, the boot camp, to train young men to understand, no, you really have to do what you're told. I remember when I went in the military, I was so nice to everybody, and I just had this real problem saying, sir. And I remember once a chief finally cornered me and he said, you call me sir. And I buckled, and I did, because I knew I had no choice. But I know that it's in us, isn't it? Isn't there like a little bit of rebellion in every one of us? You know, we don't want to submit to anybody. And we live in a world today, nobody tells me what to do. And it's far worse today than it was in World War II. But I think it's an interesting quote, isn't it? So here we are in our boot camp. It's the training ground for life. And we're being trained to respond to God without question. Adam and Eve, they questioned. Really? Maybe God's tricking us here. Maybe we can't trust him. You see, and this has been the lie that has been perpetrated down through the ages. You can't really trust God. And so we hold back some of ourselves. We don't give ourselves wholly to him. Totally. But that's my point that we should do, though. Just like a soldier who's trained. And so MacArthur quoted General Sheridan when he said this, the battles are won on the drill field and not the battlefield. Well stated. What about us? See, we're practicing every day, aren't we? We're practicing for when the trial comes up. And we forget it. We forget that we're practicing for the trial. The trial hits us, we're overwhelmed, we cave in, we seek deliverance, and we feel better, and then we'll get a guilt hits, and we go, no, and I gotta repent again. You understand the game we're in? We really are supposed to be training each day so that when that trial comes and the pressure builds up, we endure it. And we don't cave in. We keep going, even if it knocks us down. We get up, we walk, we crawl, we drag ourselves, if necessary, on towards the kingdom. And so God is preparing a place for us. He's left, he's coming back, and he's going to eventually bring that place. But he's got to prepare us now for the office and position of responsibility that he's preparing for us there. And that's what we're doing now. We're in the training camp, this earth that we're in with beautiful blue sky and the gorgeous green trees. All of this is a training ground for us to learn to be like God is. To learn what? To discipline ourselves. Yes. Gulp. To discipline ourselves. And this is our boot camp. And so to this end, it says in Proverbs 3, trust in the Lord with all your heart, and lean not to your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will direct your paths. And so we're learning to obey God in this way. In the 1900s, West Point had experienced hazing to such a degree that it had become extreme. That is, they believed they had to do this. They would haze, they would, treat people terribly in order to get them to learn this habit of obedience and submission to authority. And they would do terrible things. That was actually a couple students there that died. But the plebe year at West Point in 1900, the description was not inappropriate to say that hazing had reached an extreme at this time after the deaths of two cadets from causes attributed to hazing brought on a congressional investigation in 1901. One of those required to testify, much against his will, was Douglas MacArthur. He was in a class a year ahead of Stillwell and himself had lain on his cot in convulsions after a session of exercising. At this time, plebes were made to squat over bayonets, to run naked while buckets of chilled water were thrown at them, to hang them by their thumbs, to stand on their heads in the bathtub while the water filled up in the tub, to hold a rifle at extended arm's length for a long period, and to be sweated on a hot summer day. That is, they wrap them in sweaters and raincoats and bake them. To swallow Tabasco sauce or vast quantities of food, such as a whole bowl of molasses or 200 prunes. To engage in forced fights, to eat meals under the table, and to suffer various other humiliations. Now, this behavior was not wholly wanton. That is, its excuse was that they were like the structured drills at the college. It was said to teach self-control, resistance to panic, and above all, the acceptance of authority. The core of the military profession is discipline, and the essence of discipline is obedience. This does not come naturally to men of independent and rational minds. They must train themselves in the habit of obedience, on which the lives and fortunes of battle may someday depend. Reasonable orders are easy enough to obey. It is the capricious, bureaucratic, or plain idiotic demands that form the habit of discipline. And so they would haze the students. They would make it tough on them to be a part of it, to make it through the course. And they did it on purpose to build discipline in them. I want us to think about it. That's what they do in the world. But God doesn't do anything like that to us, does he? God tempts no man. He doesn't pressure us. He doesn't do any of this. He treats us all with great dignity, doesn't he? Even if he corrects us, he does so with dignity. 1 Corinthians 10. 1 Corinthians 10. Even if God punishes us, even if he spanks us, he doesn't humiliate us. He's not in that kind of business. But he does work with us, and he wants us to develop and train us so that we learn the trait of obedience. 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 13, by way of reminder. There is no temptation taken you but such as common to man. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above what you're able, but will with the temptation also make a way of escape that you may be able to bear it. Well, you see this? He's on our side. He's there making sure that we're going to be able to go through this and we come out stronger for it. And we will. But it comes back to what? Trusting him. Trusting him when we go through these things. And it comes back to, if we fall, if we make mistakes, if we fail, we don't ever stop. We never stop. We keep going. We keep going. Vincent Lombardi said this: success is 75% mental attitude. Mental toughness is character in action. And that's what we're about, developing a mental attitude based on character that we have developed, and we're building that. And so we continue to say this, and I want you to listen. Go all out for every play. You never know which one will win the game. Every day is our play, isn't it? You don't know which one's going to make the difference. You don't know. It may be today. It may be tomorrow, where you make the difference and God says, now I know. Now I know. This one's finished the race. And so we need to give every day our best shot, every day, to go through the trials we do. And we never accept deliverance, but we endure to the end. We become men and women of steel. Not in that we don't treat each other with softness and kindness and affection, but men and women of steel when it comes to our character, when it comes to our resolve to obey God. This is what we want to do. The kingdom must start with us. And it must start in our hearts, and it must start in our minds and in our personal lives. And we've got to become loyal, faithful, and obedient. James 1. James 1, we'll finish here. The great generals who fought in the war, Churchill, all of the rest of them, all of those men and women who were the great heroes, there wasn't one of them that wanted to be there. There wasn't one of them that wanted to be tough. They wanted to be at home. They wanted to be working in the garden. They wanted to be growing flowers. They wanted to be with their children. but they had to do what they had to do because it was a calling, because something of such magnitude was at stake. And what we have for our goal transcends anything those men could have ever thought of. Yes, I admire the vets that fought to preserve our country and our way of life, but I admire so much more the vets of the kingdom and those that are Christian soldiers today who are giving their lives in sacrifice and who are training now and who will be the ones that preserve the kingdom and the way of God so it can be restored to this earth. That's what's coming. And so we have been drafted for this fight, drafted in this war. And it's not easy. We're called to a life of war, called to be different from the world, called to be, as it were, a salmon swimming upstream, seemingly impossible to do. It's amazing to watch them. But it's well worth it. And James 1 and verse 12 says this: Blessed is the man or the woman that endures temptation, for when he is tried, he'll receive the crown of life, which the Lord has promised to them that love him. Yes, what we're going through is not always easy. It has its moments that are wonderful and beautiful, and it has its moments that are sometimes unpleasant. But if we will not give up, if we'll stay the course, if we'll hang in there, a crown awaits us. Glory, majesty, and joy forever. Difficult as it is, there'll be times when you and I will falter. When we do, I remind us today, keep going. Don't quit. Walk if you have to. Walk if you must. Crawl if you have to. Crawl if you must. But never give up. Endure to the end.